Can right-wing parties in Europe build a united front? Populist leaders meet in Poland to discuss the continent's future. But how much impact do they have in European politics? This is Inside Story. Hello, welcome to the programme. I'm Kim Vanell. The leaders of 14 European right-wing parties are at a conference in Poland. Among the nationalist and populist issues up for discussion is the building of an alternative centre of power in the European Union. Now, it's aimed at opposing the EU on issues like migration, national sovereignty, as well as lesbian, gay, bisexual and transgender rights. But the leaders face a number of challenges caused by their differences. Some view each other as too pro-Russian, while others are fine with Moscow's influence. And some have opposing views on even the main issues, including asylum seekers, which countries should host refugees and how many. Despite that, what's clear is they all want more influence in European politics.
I'm very optimistic about the coming together of this large group. I think what has happened to Poland is blackmail and a threat from the European Union. Poland resistance once again will show everyone that only in the Union that we will succeed in making the European Union bend in the most harmful way.
I'll begin our discussion in just a moment, but first let's take a look at some of Europe's main far-right parties. In France, Marine Le Pen presides over the national rally. The party has made headlines mostly for what critics say is its harsh stance against Islam and French Muslim identity. In Poland, Jarosław Kaczyński leads the ruling nationalist populist Law and Justice Party, which is often at odds with European Union policies. Italy's La Liga party is led by Matteo Salvini. He has a reputation for a hardline stance on migration, for wanting to renegotiate EU laws on asylum seekers, with the aim of deporting thousands of them. The Fidesz political party in Hungary is led by Prime Minister Viktor Orban. He presents himself as a defender of Europe against Muslim migrants. He's also at the centre of the bid to unite Europe's radical right parties. OK, let's bring in our guests. We have Aleksandra Rybińska, who is an expert at the Warsaw Institute. She joins us from Poland's capital, from Brussels in Belgium. Karel Lanou, Chief Executive Officer at the Centre for European Policy Studies. And from Vienna, Colette Schmidt, a journalist at the Austrian daily newspaper, Der Standard. A very warm welcome to you all. Thank you for joining us here on Inside Story. I'd like to begin with Aleksandra Rybińska. Do you think that these right-wing parties who are meeting in Warsaw can really build a united bloc? What are the challenges that they might face?
Well, they face actually a whole series of challenges. The first one is that they are not all in the same political group in the European Parliament. The law and justice that is governing in Poland is in the European Conservatives and Reformists group. Now, the Lega Nord, the Italian party of Matteo Salvini, is in Identity and Democracy. So the discussions have been ongoing if a new group should be formed, and some of those that are in Identity and Democracy should join the group of Law and Justice, and now this has been a subject of contention. The second question, of course, is the attitude towards Russia. It is clear that we don't have any significant political forces in Poland that would be pro-Russian, overtly pro-Russian. This is mostly dictated by our history, by our experience with Russia, which has been negative, and also today Russia is seen by Poland as an existential threat. So there are many of those parties, like the Lega Nord, like the party of Marine Le Pen, are pro-Russian, and this is also a point of contention.
So just quickly before we move on then, do you think there's any point in the meeting at all? Do you think they'll be able to form a bloc?
Well, I don't know if the aim of this meeting is really to form a bloc. I believe it is basically a continuation of that meeting that already took place in July, where a joint declaration was actually put out. This time also there will be probably a joint declaration. The subject of the meeting is European reform. These are all parties that want a Europe of nations, and this is something they firmly agree upon. So there are also many sticking points, and I think they will concentrate on this. So I expect some sort of debate, proposals for this kind of reform. They will also debate about how to stop the European Union's institutions from enlarging their competences, as the Polish law and justice says, outside of the treaties, or circumventing the treaties. I think there will be a declaration on this subject.
Okay, I'm so you think there's going to be a declaration, not necessarily a united bloc as a result. I want to come to you, Kaira Lanu. You don't take this meeting very seriously at all. Why is that?
Well, I take it to some extent serious. It's only an attempt, and I think there have been many attempts in the past like this by the right-wing or extreme right-wing groups in the European Parliament to form one bloc, but so far they have not succeeded. One of the main reasons why they're doing this is because Fidesz, the party of Orban, which was before part of EPP, which is basically the centrist conservative group in the European Parliament, was pushed out of the EPP and is now looking for a new home. And of course, there have been some kind of courting of the, or say some groups have tried, like for example, also Salvini tried to join him and to form a right-wing bloc in the European Parliament. But all these attempts have failed so far. We basically have two groups which form each of them about 10%. So together, let's say the right wing, the extreme right, forms about 20 to 25% in the European Parliament. But amongst them, they are so divided, they have such differences in orientation, that it's extremely difficult to believe that they can form a common voice. Mm-hmm. If you see, for example, in what's happening in France at the moment, we thought, let's say, that until a year ago, that probably Le Pen would again be, Marianne Le Pen would again be a serious challenger to Macron. But we now see that the extreme right in France is totally split in two groups, and Zemmour may overtake Le Pen in the presidential elections next year. So we see that the extreme right is split there. And I think which is the biggest threat in Europe for the extreme right, which we have, because in Italy, because of the Draghi government, the La Ligue Nord has been pushed a bit to the side. We also see that Salvini is not coming to the meeting in Warsaw this weekend, which is also, I think, a very important sign. I think the biggest problem is essentially what is going on in France. And there we see that the extreme right is split. Also, if you look at the German elections in September, the AfD, the Alternative for Deutschland, and other extreme right groups do not pose a threat anymore in Germany. So I think it's an attempt to pose a voice, but as the previous speaker said, there is this issue about Russia, where you have totally different orientations. And we know for sure that the party of Marianne Le Pen got subsidies, got support from Russia, and something like this in Poland is totally unacceptable.
Okay, I'd like to bring you in, Colette Schmidt. We've talked a lot then about the differences between all of these parties meeting in Warsaw, something that they have said previously when they signed that declaration of basically saying they're on the same page was that they want to fight for family values. I mean, but that could look very different to different parties and to different countries, couldn't it?
Well, I totally agree to what you said about what is going on in France. I mean, that's one of the, I think, very important points that Marine Le Pen maybe wants to collect points if she tries to reunite or unite the far right, because at home it's not really going well for her. What really unites all these groups is, or most of them, that it's not, they have all seen better days and they really are not on the rise right now in their home countries. So this is one point. And the family values, as you call them, are really a problem that they have with human rights, LGBT rights. You can see that in Hungary and Poland, they really are in trouble because of this within the EU. So this is probably one of the reasons why Poland and Hungary are now sticking together. Because here also you have the problem that Poland is very anti-Russian. And Orban, apparently, not at all. So this is probably one of the main reasons that they are not getting all the funds of the EU right now and have problems there.
Mm-hmm. Aleksandra Rybinska, I'd like to put that to you. Do you agree with the sentiment that the right-wing popularity across the board is on the decline across Europe?
I wouldn't say it is on the decline. If you look at Poland, the law and justice is governing, and so is Orban in Hungary. And we don't know how the approaching elections in both countries will go, but chances are they will stay in power. So I wouldn't say it is universally declining. In some countries, that might be the case. And I do believe that Eric Zemmour in France has joined the presidential race in order to shift the debate onto immigration issues more than it was present in the debate before. So I think he has a certain function in this presidential race, and it wasn't necessarily done so he can really become president, as he has slim chances for that to happen. So I think the right is maybe not in Italy and other countries about to take over power, but we have to say it is still there. I mean, the hope, I think, in Brussels was it was going to disappear one day, but that didn't happen. So it is present and it is gaining momentum, for example, in Sweden. So or in Spain with the Vox party. So we will see what's going to happen, of course, in the next couple of months and years. But that doesn't necessarily mean that those parties need to form a common bloc. If they can cooperate in issues where they agree, and there are enough issues where they agree. So I don't think forming a united bloc is necessary.
Karel Anu, do you agree with what the previous speakers have said in terms of the impact, the power, the popularity of right-wing parties in European politics right now?
Yeah, to some degree, but I would add to that that what brings them together is their hate to Europe, but they have no alternative. Meaning, it's very funny, they don't like all of them Europe, and they come together to express this. But if you then look at the character of these different parties, they are so different already on this fundamental thing which you said, which is family values. They will have totally different views, for example, on the role of the church, on, for example, issues like abortion, which is a big issue for some of these parties, but not for others, or for example, on the society, other societal matters, where you see that it's extremely difficult to unite them. And they have been trying, as I said, let's say, to do this for a long time. If you compare this to the other political groups in the European Parliament, which also have this issue to try to form a common bloc, they are much more advanced, like the European People's Party or the Socialists and Democrats, or certainly the Greens or the Liberals. They are much more united in the political ID they stand for than the extreme right, which has totally different orientation. So again, I would say I'm not too concerned, let's say, that they can do much against. Of course, it's a pity. I personally find it a pity that there are so many in the European Parliament and that they get paid by all of us. But that's what we have in democracy. And if you see what happened again in the German elections in September, and Merkel can be proud of this, she has managed again to marginalize the AfD, the extreme right in Germany. Of course, Germany has a special, because of its history, a special connotation with extreme right. But we see that I'm not too concerned, let's say, about the extreme right, apart from France. And as I said, let's say, the good thing which is happening now, apparently they are splintered amongst themselves. And Le Pen, which I think has challenged 3 or 4 times already, has been in the second round 3 or 4 times, let's say, to become president of in France, never managed. So
Colette Schmidt, I can
think
see
it
you.
Will stay that way.
I just want to pass over to Colette. Colette Schmidt, because I can see you nodding your head there talking, your mic was off, but was there something you wanted to add to that?
Well, in France, you can see what you can really watch in a lot of countries in Europe. Le Pen started moving to the middle because she was too far right to get voted into a powerful position. And now, of course, there's a new man with Eric Zemmour, who's really very far right again, and this will go on like this, because they get divided in the end, and if they don't unite, it will be hard for them to gain power, I think so. But however, what I wanted to say is that it's paradox, but these right-wing or even right-conservative parties are all nationalists, and that doesn't fit very well into the idea of the European Union. So even if they try again and again to unite, it won't on the long run work, I think so, because they really don't think internationally. Do you understand what I mean?
Not, yeah. I want to put that same sentiment yeah. to Aleksandra Rybinska. I guess what we're trying to say is, or what's being suggested there, is that these parties who believe an essential tenet for many of them is national sovereignty, then looking to build an international united front might seem to some like an inherent contradiction. What do you think?
I don't think it is necessarily a contradiction. And right now, we do not have a supranational European state. We have nation states in Europe. And right now, nation states are the only guarantee for democracy. Neither the European Commission is elected, so it has little democratic legitimization. Greatest democratic legitimization lies with nation states. That is a fact. The second thing is, I don't think those parties hate Europe. What they want is to reform Europe. We are all part of the European Union, and we all have to somehow think about what kind of European Union we want. Now, we have federalists who want a federal state, and then we have those parties meeting today and tomorrow in Warsaw who want a Europe of nations, which was actually the initial idea of Robert Schuman. It was supposed to be a Europe of nations, and it has developed more and more into a deeper integration. Not everybody wants that. And I think those parties have a right to discuss their vision of Europe. That does not mean that they hate Europe. They want to change it. They don't want to abolish it. So that is a totally different thing. And I think it is really that many assumptions are made about, for example, the law and justice, that they are Eurosceptic. They're not Eurosceptic at all. We do not really have Eurosceptic parties in Poland. Those are fringe parties that don't really matter on the political scene.
Okay. Kara Lanu, I want to put that to you, but advance it a little bit in that often one thing is born of the other, right? Right-wing populism, perhaps a reaction to its opposite. What is it that you think these parties are rebelling against? And even if you don't agree with the form that rebellion might be taking, could it be cause for some soul-searching within the EU?
If I listen to the previous speaker, I would say I would certainly disagree with you, because Schuman was in favour of a form of a United Nations, of a United States of Europe, like we see it in the United States of America, which is a federal state, but clearly federal competences at the top. And that's what we want to create in Europe, and we want to advance in this sense. And that's certainly what these extreme right or these very right-wing groups in the European Parliament do not want. They basically want to go back to what we have achieved. For example, I remember very well that interview between Le Pen and Macron, when Macron, for the second round about 4.5 years ago, were arguing, and Le Pen wanted to abolish the euro, wanted to go back onto that. And Macron was then asking to her, let's say, but what essentially is the euro doing? And she hardly knew, and she fell basically through this argumentation. She lost her chances, let's say, to be elected. I mean, that's what this group wants, let's say, to go back on these commitments and to strengthen the nation state, for example, also to undermine the Court of Justice. And the European Court of Justice is basically the arbiter if there are issues where we don't agree amongst 27 member states, which is the ultimate authority to go to, which we now use, for example, also for the attribution of the EU funds, which we agreed in the Next Generation EU, and on what conditionality could be imposed by the European Commission to get these funds, which, for example, is an issue for Poland at the moment. But this is all part of a federal construction. This is not only the construction of the United Nations of Europe. We have made a long way, let's say, over the last 30, 40 years in integrating Europe and strengthening supranational competences within the EU. And I would also argue, let's say, that the Commission is probably not directly elected, but she's tightly controlled by the European Parliament, and the European Parliament is directly elected. Of course, okay. The European Parliament is not entirely a parliament as we know it at the national level, but already has many competences to do that.
What I hear is that I hear some disagreement about what it is that these right-wing parties want in terms of the future of Europe, their visions. I want to come to you, Colette Schmidt, about some of the factors that are at play here, the context in which this is all happening. What do you think that the migrant crisis has done, not just on Poland's border with Belarus, but across the EU? What do you think it has done for these sort of nationalist, populist parties? You know, while the EU may not agree with when many of these parties or leaders or even nations, It is open to discussing, for example, the EU financing of physical border infrastructure. So what do you think that has done to this whole discussion?
Well, it has served the right-wing parties around the European Union well, of course, the crisis in especially 2015, because especially in countries that took in a lot of refugees, they could really gain power, like in Austria and in Germany. As you know, in Austria, we even had the Freedom Party in our government for 2 years. Then we know the end of that story with the Ibiza video. But this was really helping them to rise. Now we have another crisis. Apart from migrants, Belarus and Poland, we have a corona all over the EU. And I think if you look at the recent elections, just Germany, for instance, maybe the coronavirus pandemic crisis was more a topic to a lot of voters than the migrants. I think so. But of course, this crisis really divided the EU because actually we could not find a way to share the responsibility for refugees all over and to the same amount in every country, in every member.
Aleksandra Dubinska, you say that the idea of building a united front, a grouping of parties with the same aims, it's not new. So why is it that it's advancing now, do you think?
It is being brought up now, especially by the Polish Law and Justice, who has initiated this meeting because of the dispute over the rule of law that it has with the European Commission or with Brussels, to put it that way. And obviously, it is seen as a good occasion to show that they do have support. One of the main subjects of the discussions during this meeting is effectively limiting the competences of the European institutions. So from the point of view of the Polish government, which has been confirmed by a ruling of the Polish Constitutional Court, the European institutions only possess competences that have been allocated to them in the treaties by the member states. And so the European Commission that is criticizing the justice reforms in Poland is acting outside of the treaties, outside of these competences, and this is not acceptable. So there's a number of political forces on the right side, on the conservative side in Europe that see this in a similar way. And I think this is one of the reasons for this conference. But I wanted also say something to what has been said before about the migrant crisis. I would really like to stress the crisis at the Polish-Belarus border is not a migrant crisis. It is a geopolitical crisis. There are no natural migrant flows through Belarus. Belarus is a dictatorship, and I don't know of any people wanting to move there or go through there. This is a country where people flee from and not go to. There are no natural migration flows. It's an artificial crisis created by Alexander Lukashenko. And as soon as he stops taking the planes in with the migrants, there will be no migrant flow anymore.
I can see others nodding their heads in agreement with you. We've got less than 60 seconds now until the end of the program. I'd like to end very quickly with you, Kara Lanu. How do you see the trajectory right now in terms of the future of the far right?
I mean, we'll continue to have a far right, let's say, in Europe, but that also will depend on the circumstances, on how we deal with all these different crises which we have. But if you see how well we covered the health crisis and how well the EU worked in a domain which is not an EU competence, health, where the EU basically managed to order vaccines for all of the Europeans, and I think we are basically ahead of the rest of the world in the way we are controlling this health crisis at the moment. Of course, we still have a lot of problems in many states, but the EU has reacted, and you only need to remember what happened in February, March, when it was unsure whether we will get there. And then von der Leyen said we will have so many percent, 60 or 70% of the population vaccinated by July, which we managed to do, again, in a domain which is not an EU competence. Where you see, by the way, we see the same now with energy, a demand from member states, again, in an area which is not an EU competence, energy supply, to have more European competences to jointly order gas, to jointly order, mm-hmm. I mean, oil, for example, to just control the prices and to make sure that they have much more leverage on, for example, Russia, which is supplying a lot of gas in Europe.
All right. My apologies. We'll have to leave it there. Very Big thank you to all of our guests for joining us, Alexandra Rybinska, Karel Lanou and Colette Schmidt. And thank you too for watching. You can see the program again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. And for further discussion, go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. You can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is @AJInsideStory. From me, Kim Vanel, and the whole team here in Doha. Bye-bye for now.